Well, what's so fascinating about Trisha's work, drawing on her records from the Vatican, Tibet, India, Egypt, along with Greek, Aramaic, and Pali texts, as well as oral traditions of Jesus' teaching. She has uncovered reasons that he has remained and why such a powerful and pivotal figure in the world consciousness for over 2 millennia. It's amazing. In these travels to England, India, Egypt, and all over the places, did he learn anything more in one spot, Trisha, than the other?
Oh, gosh. You know, George, you ask great questions. I'm sure that every one of those beautiful orders had a great deal of wisdom to impart. And like all of us, each stage of his journey was an increase in his own awareness, evolution, gifts, and powers. Certainly, the reports from the Great White Brotherhood are that on the ship coming from Britain to India, which took about 5 months, that he was taught by an adept called Yama Chandra, who was a yogic adept. And, of course, he would have been, what, when he got to India, maybe 16, 17 years old. Mm-hmm. And then he was taken to various masters and actually observed a lot of the masters that did, you know, things like laying on beds of nails and, you know, all the extraordinary things the yogis have done. And that one of the questions he asked was, why didn't they use their gifts for the healing of the people? And, of course, that's the way that he really chose to use his gifts, was for the healing of the people physically, emotionally, spiritually, mentally. So I think Egypt was probably very powerful, even though he obviously had a great love for Britain, because Joseph of Arimathea set up the very first Christian community in the world in 37 A.D., right at Glastonbury. In fact, 12 huts around one central hut. And the diameter of each of the 12 huts was 21.6 feet. Well, you know, what does that relate to? Well, the star mysteries. Every astrological year, there are 12 astrological ages. Every one of them is 2,160 years.
Interesting.
And the central hut, which was the hut that Jesus himself built when he was 15, 16 years old, was almost 26 feet in diameter. And, of course, the whole precession of the equinox, the movement of the sun through the 12 signs of the zodiac, takes approximately 26,000 years.
It seems like he was well-received wherever he went. I don't hear you in your research saying that he encountered problems at all. It seems like they just all welcomed him.
Well, I think that they were looking for him. I think that, you know, this gets into some of very hidden stuff that I talk about in my book. Jesus was one of what are known as the four great Kumaras. Have you ever heard that term?
I have not.
Well, in Sanskrit, the word Kumara means son. And in the Vedas, it's said that there are these four great Kumaras that come occasionally from the higher worlds that are direct emanations of the Divine Father principle, or God with a big G, you know.
All right.
The masculine aspect.
And he was one of four, so who were the other three?
Well, Sanat Kumara, who is the head of the Great White Brotherhood, is one. And Jesus' name, his spiritual name, was Sananda Kumara.
Hmm.
Now, of course, the name that he used as he traveled through most of these lands was actually Issa, I-S-S-A, which means firstborn. Very interesting. And one of the names, in fact, for Brahma is Isara Anima Heritu, okay, which if you analyze that word, Issa, firstborn, Ra, light, firstborn light, anima, that animates, Heritu. Well, Heritu is actually a derivative like of Heru, H-E-R-U. Heru was the name for Horus. Okay, so Horus would represent the principle of truth. So firstborn light that animates through truth. Okay, so this is all, it's all very connected. In England, he was known as Issa. The Coptic Church in Egypt called him Lord Issa, E-S-S-A. In India, he was known as Lord Issa. So
what if these great Kumaras really weren't four, but just one who came back four times?
Now, this is a very interesting thing, George, and I'll tell you how I came to this information. You know, I'm a clairvoyant and a mystic, and as I said at the beginning of the show, every clairvoyant has their antenna pointed different places. Some, like the wonderful John Edwards, he talks to the dead. He's mostly looking in the fourth dimension, and his gift is beautiful. It's given a lot of hope to a lot of people. Everyone's different. Where my antenna is pointed has always been to the highest heavens. And to the masters and to the angels and to who people are at the highest level of the soul, beyond all the junk that we take on and all the drama that we have around us. Who are we really, and what has our journey through time been, and where are we now in the roadmap of our evolution, and what do we have to clear? So that's why I do readings for people all over the world. With what happened for me in the writing of this book, I, as you may know if you've read the introduction, I never intended to write this book. I came off the road, and I was writing a book actually about 2012, 2013, 2017, and some of the great prophecies and earth changes that I personally have been involved in as someone who's traveled around the world. Lived through a lot of amazing things. And then that was so advanced, that book, that I thought, well, I'll just back up and try to give my readers a better foundation about the mysteries and how I got involved with them and how come I know all this stuff. So I started a book called Decoding the Mysteries of the Ages, and the subtitle was The Secret Teachings of Jesus, Isis, Horus, and the Masters of the Far East. And I put three little chapters on Jesus in the book, and I kept writing. And as I went along, I thought, well, I bet people don't know this, and I bet people don't know that. And before I knew it, I had 200 pages on Jesus inside of this bigger book about the mysteries and these Kumaras, actually. And I thought, Mamma Mia, what am I to do? So I actually had this profound experience where I was in my office and laying on the floor between Christmas and New Year's, and I became aware that this brilliant light was over me, and I opened my eyes, and Jesus was standing over me. And, you know, I've seen angels and masters and some very profound beings in my life that have taught me, and I always hoped to see Jesus. I never really did. I'd only had one other experience where he had appeared to me.
At least you didn't see him on a piece of toast like somebody does and then sell it on eBay, right?
Right. Not on toast, not on a wall.
Yeah.
But it was a he appeared without any preamble. I mean, his energy was so profoundly light. I mean, there was none of this heavy-duty suffering on the cross stuff. It was joyful. It was light. It was brilliant, and it opened the heart. That's the biggest thing I would say about him. And without any preamble, he said, I want you to write a book about my lost years and secret teachings. There's been enough war and bloodshed in my name. And I was, of course, quite stunned, but then my response was, well, can I finish this other book first? You know, How We Are So Human. Well, you know, I was involved in the other book. So he smiled and kind of laughed, just like you did, and waved his hand like, don't worry, it will just take a moment. And, of course, you know, 3 years later, but, you know.
Here you are.
Yeah, here we are.
Let's take a few calls here. You ready? Let's go to Toronto, Canada. On the Skype line, Armindal, there you go. You're up with us.
Hi, George. Thank you for accepting my call. I've been listening to you for quite a while.
Thank you.
I'm a night shift worker, but I'm off today. I just wanted to ask, my son, the information that Tricia has, my son was infected in the hospital, and he has brain damage, quite a bit. He's doing a lot more than what the doctor said he would do.
Mm-hmm.
But with all the knowledge that she knows about these yogis and that, how a person who has a normal brain, they can be helped out if they study these things. With a person who has brain damage, how in God's name is that going to help? How can I help my son become better in life?
How old is your son, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, he's 3 years old right now. He's got the cerebral palsy. The infection he got, the thing he got was PVL, paraventricular leukomalacia, it's called. It happens in the NICU sometimes. He got it from an infection that was passed on from maybe one of the medical staff, I'm not sure. But he was doing really well, and then all of a sudden, after some brain ultrasound, after the infection, the brain ultrasound showed that he had quite a bit of brain damage, almost 50% of the top of the brain, and he has cortical vision impairment. And there's a few other questions I wanted to ask, because I am Roman Catholic, and my faith is very low. And
well, you're not alone with that, Armando. A lot of people are feeling that way these days.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'd like to say this, that when I was in college, I worked for a couple of summers at a place called Sunland in Florida as I was working my way through school. And I worked on a ward that had 80 retarded kids, and 10 of them we were trying to teach to eat, feed themselves. And I remember at that time, as a clairvoyant that didn't have as much control over my gifts as I had at all, asking the same very deep questions: why is such suffering allowed to happen? You know, what's the story with these souls? Why are they trapped in these very challenging bodies? What's the purpose behind it? And I think for every individual soul, there's a different answer. Sometimes the soul is a very advanced soul that comes in order to, let us say, clean up a whole lot of karma, do 5 lifetimes in a short space. At other times, they come in order to evoke compassion in those around them and help them to, let us say, step beyond the physical interpretation of life to reach into the inner realms and to develop their own compassion or spiritual gifts. And there are many levels of service these souls can be taking on. I remember some years ago I did a reading for a man who was very grief-stricken about the loss of his child, who had, you know, been about 5 and turned himself over in bed and couldn't turn himself back, and he had been a very challenged little boy. And it was eating him up with guilt because he blamed himself for his child's illness. Well, when I did the reading, what happened is this very masterful adept came into the room and said, "I incarnated as his son. And I came in because I had worked so hard through many, many lifetimes, and so hard that I needed a lifetime of R&R where what I experienced was pure and unconditional love. And my parents gave it to me. And I only intended to stay for 3 years, and I stayed for 5 because I so loved my parents." And it was a very profound experience for him, and it healed his heart and also his wife's, because they realized what had really been taking place was really a sacred contract and a gift that their love had given to that beautiful soul.
Do you believe in prayer or consciousness, Tricia? Do you think that works?
I do. I think that, you know, one of those 7 hermetic laws in the universe is that the universe responds to our thoughts coupled with our emotions. And so when we pray in a very profoundly surrendered place to spirit, what happens is we open a gateway into the inner realms to connect with the divinities. And when I say the divinities, I mean that there is a God with a big G, but there are many expressions as we come down. You know, there's the divine female, the divine male. Jesus called it the Abba, Amma, Father, Mother. And, of course, that got changed by the patriarchy into just the Father. And we do have, you know, the Son and the Holy Ghost, but most people don't realize that the Holy Ghost is the Shekinah or the divine feminine.
Let's go to Cleveland, Ohio, east of the Rockies. Anna, go ahead. You're up with us.
Hi, George.
Hi. How are you?
And Tricia, I'm so glad to speak with you.
Hi, you're Donna. Nice to meet
Anna.
You.
Anna.
Oh, Anna.
Yes. And I have a question about initiation. I've read about the mysteries, and I usually get so mind-boggled that I end up just looking at the pictures and somehow hoping that maybe the symbolism will give me some messages. So.
Well, actually, very wise of you, Anna, because, in fact, those hermetic symbols, and that's why I had to have illustrations to the book, because if you see the symbols and you begin to understand them, it opens these energetic, let us say, portals of awakening. Absolutely.
Jordan Maxwell's talked about symbols in the past on this program, and here's the big question. Why put things in symbols? Are they hiding it from certain people?
No. Yes. Okay, let me say. Initially, the reason is because the information that comes from the higher realms comes through the light and sound of God. So it comes through holographic images, and it comes through sound frequencies and vibration. So when you begin to travel in the inner world, that's how it's downloaded into you. And we have hermetic symbols in our world today, but most of us don't even realize that we have them. And many of the ancient sacred symbols have sort of been, let us say, conscripted by consumerism and materialism because they know that there's a potent energy behind them, but they've been, let's say, secularized. Like, you know, if you look at the cars, you've got the lion on the Peugeot. You've got Chevy that's got a golden cross in Lincoln. You've got the symbol of Hathor on the on Taurus. You know, so these symbols have been secularized, but the original meaning, the real meaning of hermetic, is not an exoteric symbol like stop the car or turn here for a restaurant. It's an esoteric symbol that, as you say, Anna, takes us into a deeper place within ourselves and can awaken us. In fact, this book I've just written, I've had a friend who is a clairvoyant who said there are 144 initiatory codes in this book that when people read it, they get downloaded and activated. And I guess all the people that I were reading the book in the first 6 months when it was in manuscript form before it's just come out were telling me that they felt like the book was an initiation.
What do you think happened on this planet a long time ago, Tricia? What events? Extraterrestrial visitations? Do you think they all happen?
I think that we've been visited many, many times, and that there have been successive, let us say, civilizations. And I'm sure you know this because of your own research, that there are cycles within cycles, and the Golden Age, the Silver Age, the Bronze Age, and the Iron Age. And even within the large cycles, like we're now have entered 5,000 years ago, the Kali Yuga, or the age where we're more asleep, there are still golden, silver, bronze, and iron within that larger cycle. So I think that certainly Atlantis was a great star colony. There was a tremendous amount of traffic with spaceships coming in and out. I see this whenever I look at people's records that incarnated in Atlantis, Lemuria before them, and also at the same time as Atlantis. And this is just as far back as we know. I mean, there's even further back when you start looking at the archaeological remains. So we're in a particular society that has been going for, well, according to mainstream history, it started, what, 3,114 BC.
Which is nothing in the terms of time, nothing at all. Tricia, when we come back, we'll take calls from Richmond, Virginia, Springfield, Illinois, Utah, Pasadena, California, Golden, Colorado, and Petaluma, and so many other places on Coast to Coast AM. Oh, we've got a great week of programs for you here on Coast to Coast AM. But let's come right back and take these final calls with Tricia McCannon on Coast to Coast AM. Tricia, was Jesus, in your opinion, based on your research, truly the Son of God, or was he just a human being who just knew some of these answers to these mysteries?
You know, I think for a long time I thought it was the second one, because certainly there have been other incredible masters and avatars on this planet that are, you know, I've certainly considered at the same level as Jesus. But the deeper I've gotten into these profound mysteries about the four Kumaras, the more I really believe that these four beings that keep coming back in different expressions, and they came as Horus, Osiris, Jesus, probably Rama and Krishna, Buddha.
Buddha, for sure.
Mm-hmm, they came. These are the four Kumaras, and each one of them has a specific M.O., and Jesus's M.O., I personally believe, having done such deep research with this, that he had incarnated as Osiris in a much, much earlier age of Earth, and he came back in and basically repeated the same MO, you know, surrounded by two aspects of the divine feminine, and Mary the mother, Mary the a consort or the companion, just as Osiris, it was Isis and Nephthys. And it's the same thing. He raised humanity and brought light and healing everywhere he went. And then, of course, he was taken out by the dark, and then he rose from the dead. In Osiris's case, you know, it was through the power of Isis or love that he was risen for a little bit, enough to conceive Horus, and then that was it. But in Jesus's case, it was the full embodiment of a conscious being and a conscious choice, and someone who had the commitment, the dedication to develop those nine inner bodies to actually be able to heal people and lay down his life. And he says that, I lay down my life willingly and I take it back again. And he actually had the ability to do it.
You think the Shroud of Turin, and we're going to talk about that on Easter, but do you think the Shroud of Turin is authentic?
You know, I would say that there seems like there's, I think it probably is. Okay, I'll just say that. But, you know, there have been many levels of research, and I always look at the research and the facts. As much as it vibrationally feels like it is, I'm, you know, like I said, I'm a researcher. So I know you have a lot of other people on the line.
Yes, how did you know that? Because you're clairvoyant.
That's right, and I can see the lines buzzing. And I do want to say to those earlier callers, especially that lovely man who called me about his son, you know, I do readings. I'm perfectly willing to take a look for you if you want to call me or, you know, go to my website or something. You'll find my telephone number.
Let's go to Josie now in Richmond, Virginia. Hi, Josie. You're up.
Hi. I don't have a computer and don't know how to work one, and I wish you would get your phone number. Hello?
I'm happy to. Is that okay, George?
If you want to give your phone number, that's up to you.
Sure thing, but wait till tomorrow afternoon. I have to recover from George's show. It's 5 o'clock in the morning over here.
Good luck. Don't do it, but go ahead.
Okay, well, my website's www.trishamcannonspeaks.com.
But you remember now, she doesn't have a computer.
And my phone number is 404-355-2211, and I do consultations and readings and things like that for people, and you'll find all sorts of stuff about the mysteries on my website, from DVDs and CDs to these classes I'm actually developing for people. So, you know, just wait till afternoon tomorrow to call.
Oh, no, I won't do that. I'll probably wait longer than that, but I have a research project for you, and since you like the God talk, I thought you might be interested in this.
Absolutely. I adore him. He was one of the four great Kumaras and one of the only people besides Jesus to have ever carried the blueprint of the Logos, or the blueprint of creation within his being.
Huh. Well, my maiden name is Toth, by the way. My family from the Toth side comes from Hungary. And when I went to a museum here in Richmond, I saw another little god called Pataki, who is also a Hungarian. Governor Pataki of New York.
Sure.
So I thought, since Hungary has a language like no other on Earth, it's a little bit like Finnish, that maybe what I'm wondering, and also there is another name in my husband's family, Tuthill. Well, Tut is from Toth also, and Tuthill is Irish. So I begin to think, well, maybe they all flooded out of Atlantis when it sank. And it's only a question, because you're the one who's able to trace all this stuff back, and I'm really curious about it, of course. And by the way, there is a Horus on my table upstairs.
He's beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah. And anyway, I just thought that this was a compelling thing to think. Look, to go and see a little god Pataki from Egypt, Toth is from Egypt, but maybe not originally. And maybe when Atlantis sank, maybe part of the tribes went to places like Hungary.
Yes, I'm sure. In fact, they were 10 provinces in Atlantis, and they were supposedly 10 migrations. And, you know, the Celtic, like, for example, in the Celtic lands, the god with a small g that led those people to Britain was called Hugh Jesus, like Jesus. to Jesus, and he was known as the dying God that died on a cross and sacrificed himself for humanity. But yes, I have no doubt. Thoth was known by many names. You know, his real name was Ningirsita. That's the Sumerian name. Thoth was, or Tehuti was how he was known in Egypt. To the Greeks, he was Hermes, or Hermes Trismegistus, thrice great Hermes. And some have believed, and I think it's quite possible, that he may have actually incarnated as Quetzalcoatl over in Central and South America. So yeah, Thoth is, he set up many, many, many of the mystery schools. He was a profoundly enlightened being, and I believe Thoth is probably still alive.
When, Tricia, though, does the next being show up?
Well, now... Actually, George, you do ask the greatest questions. You know, I'm very much an astronomer, astrologer, as well as a clairvoyant, and these beings tend to come between the change of the ages. So Jesus came between the age of Aries and the age of Pisces. Mithra, if you go back far enough, was between the age of Taurus and the age of Gemini. And so we're due for one. And this being was known to the ancient mysteries as the great Aeon. A-I-O-N. And many times he was depicted as having a lion's head, like the Lion of God or the Great Lion of the Judah, the Lion of Judah. And also he'd have the serpentine seven coils of the serpent wrapped around him, not because of the serpent connotation to Lucifer, no, but because it had to do with the movement of the kundalini through the seven chakras in the spinal system. And he'd hold other things like a torch of knowledge or illumination. He would be shown standing on a world as the great Cosmocrator, the one who brought in the enlightenment for the coming age. Sometimes he was shown coming out of the great cosmic egg at the beginning of the birth of the world, the firstborn son of God, if you will. So all of this symbology, Hermetic symbology, was all about telling a story about who this being really is from the highest levels.
Okay, we go now to Springfield, Illinois. Jim is with us. Hey, Jim, go ahead.
Okay, I just had one question. Is there any evidence that Jesus had ever gotten sick or had diseases or anything?
Good question. What do you think, Tricia?
It's a great question. In fact, some very hidden documents that I got access to from the Vatican that you can also find. And, I mean, I talk about this some in my book, but we edited 200 pages from the book. So is the Essene Gospels of Peace. And these were brought out of the Vatican and translated at a life's work by a man named Edward Zelonsky. And he lived actually in California, but he was a young student that studied in the secret archive of the Vatican for many years and found these Aramaic texts and brought them, copied them, brought them out. And in them, he talks about Jesus knowing a tremendous amount about health and healing, about fasting. He said, for every 7 years you've eaten badly, you should fast for 7 days. He knew about parasites and tapeworms. There's some amazing stories about that. He talked about with food, he was very much about living food. He said, if you eat living food, life comes from it. If you eat dead food, dead comes from it. Death comes from it.
He was smart about that.
He was very smart. I mean, I'm sure, you know, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. I mean, I'm sure he ate fish and chicken when he had to, but basically he tended towards vegetarianism, as many of the Essenes did and many of the yogis did.
Let's go to Lisa in Petaluma, California. First-time caller. Hi, Lisa.
Hey, George.
Good to have you with us.
Thanks. Hey, Tricia.
Hey, Lisa.
I really need to hear about the induced near-death experiences in the cave. As part of initiation?
Well, that was very powerful, and it's, again, some of the most hidden secret stuff about the mysteries, and I talk about it in the book.
Okay.
They took people down for 3 days and three nights, and this is where, when I talked to George earlier and said Jesus played out these cosmic dramas before the whole world, this is all, you know, as above, so below. We know in the astronomy of the year, the December 21st, the winter solstice, the sun's at the lowest southernmost point. It appears to hang on the southern cross. That's in the sky. And then 3 days later, December 25th, the sun visibly begins to move as the rebirth of the Son of God. This is why Jesus, Mithra, Horus, Osiris were all said to be born on that day. So when we start talking about the mysteries in the caves, they actually took you down, and there were successive levels of initiation. In the first level, you had to actually go through air, earth, fire, and water. All of the four elements. These were called the gunas in India. But they took you through some pretty scary things where you had to go through walls of fire. You know, you walked out on this bridge and you knocked on this door with these big old knockers, and then suddenly the ground fell out from under you and you were buffeted by these winds. And, you know, if you, you know, like, oh, who knows, you might have died. But they literally put them through these near-death experiences in order to give them the chance to propel them out of their bodies and have them travel in the inner worlds for the purposes of, don't take my word for it and believe and find out after you die. Find out now. Learn that you're an immortal soul, and what you do comes back to you, cause and effect. And that when we let ourselves be trapped by anger, grief, sorrow, you know, any of the five passions of the mind, lust, vanity, any of that stuff, it holds us here and it retards our spiritual progress. And so that was in the first level of the mysteries. And in the second level, they upped the ante, if you will, where the people actually began having conversations and dialogues and experiences with divinities from the inner planes.
Okay, very good. Next up, Lisa, thanks for your call, by the way. Mont in St. George, Utah, you're up with us. Hey, Mont, go ahead.
Hey, George, how's it going tonight?
Okay, all is well. Thanks.
Good, good. Tricia, it's great to hear you tonight.
Thank you.
I had a couple of questions. Number one, you had talked about Anna as being Jesus's grandmother.
Uh-huh.
And do you know what his grandfather's name would have been?
Well, in the Protoevangeline, which came out about 200 years after Jesus, and while it may actually be true, it was sort of a sanitized version that the early church put out. But in that version of reality, when Anna left the Celts, she came down and married an Essene man. In that version, she and he didn't have a child. And in the Jewish community, a man's worth was measured by how many sons he had, how many children. And so they were reproached by the high priest, and they went out, both of them, and prayed. And an angel appeared to Anna and said, you know, okay, your prayers have been heard, and you're going to be given a child whose name will be sung by all the world, that being Mary. And so that husband's name was called Joachim, according to the Protoevangeline.
Mm-hmm.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, yes. And do we know of what great-grandparents? Do we have any idea about that part of the lineage?
Well, if you go back to the Gwinnessa line, and I talk about this line and this whole lineage from the Celtic side, that's really, really fascinating. That's, again, you see it linked with those whole Avalon mysteries of the quest for the Holy Grail and Arthur's Round Table. Again, you know, 12 around the one, okay, and the Glastonbury Zodiac. Further back in terms of names than Anna, though, I don't know. I don't know any other names.
I have not heard you talk about the Knights Templar yet.
Well, the Knights Templar certainly knew these mysteries.
They did.
They did. They understood that the Catholic Church was repressing reincarnation, was repressing things about Mary Magdalene, and I think very well there probably was a bloodline genetic lineage that resulted in the Merovingian kings. And for those of you who've studied this stuff, I've been all through the south of France, where the Mary Joseph of Arimathea and Mary Salome and Mary Jacobi and Mary Magdalene, all of them went and so forth. But it's a very interesting with the lineage of the Christ, because when they dug up one of the Merovingian kings, they discovered 300 golden bees. Well, the bee was a hermetic symbol that was belonged to the pharaohs of ancient Egypt. They were the beekeepers, because in the ancient world there were only two things known to be preservatives, salt and honey.
That's right.
So they were preserving the nectar of wisdom for future ages.
Salt they got from the Red Sea, didn't they?
I'm sure they did. Or the Dead Sea. So that lineage, if you look at it, went right from Egypt, and also Persia used the beekeepers. And you'll see beehives, the original beekeeper being Isis Osiris. You know, so it came right down through that lineage of wisdom to through the Jewish lineage in the line of Judah to Jesus to eventually the Merovingians. And, of course, the Templars knew about all this stuff.
Okay, next up we go to Wesley Golden, Colorado. Go ahead, Wesley.
Hey, George, how are you doing this morning?
Good, thank you.
This is a bittersweet call for me because it'll probably be one of my last ones to you. I'm getting switched from the night shift to the day shift of my security position.
You can podcast us with Streamlink, but you might not be able to make the call.
Exactly, but yeah. I will still listen, and whoever replaces me, I'll make sure that he becomes a listener as well, so you won't lose one.
Super. We love them all.
What's that?
We want them all.
You want them all. Well, I'll get you as many as I can. It's Tricia, right?
Yes, Wesley. How can I help?
I have a question for you. I've been listening off and on all night, and I've gotten most of it. Unfortunately, I've had to go away from the radio a couple times, but I'm curious how it all ties together, because I did hear you say that you do believe that Jesus was the Son of God, and I'm curious as to how things like clairvoyancy and mysticism, things like that, it seems like biblically a lot of those things were kind of frowned upon within the scriptures.
Well, in those days, you're absolutely right, Wesley. 30 seconds, Tricia, then we've got to go. Give them a quick answer.
Well, let me just say that it's a longer question, but the Essenes knew all about those inner gifts, and they cultivated them. I will say this. If you want to know more about this stuff, by all means, please pick up the book, because I talk about some of it, or check out my website. And, you know, I'm happy to answer any questions as long as we have enough time. Just give me a call. I'm open.
All right. Thanks, Tricia. Tricia's website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Thank you so much. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasur, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.